Attention.
Raging review.
The Raging Cajuns will be a source of pride for this university, for the alumni, fans, and donors as we achieve success in the classroom, in the competitive arena, and in the community.
It's about to get really fun.
We're looking for dudes that will stand up. Well, Coach, let me tell you today, I'm here and I'm ready to stand up. And I challenge you, Raging Cajun Nation, to stand up with us. Stand up with us. Let's lock hand in hand and let's walk through the gates of Omaha.
Hey, I love y'all boys. Let's grind every day starting today. Let's do it.
Y'all ready?
Alert! Alert! Ready! Who's your team ready? Who's your team ready? Yes, sir!
I got one thing to say right here. Cajuns win!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Raging Review Podcast. It's your boy Nick and your boy Josh. Jerry is working out right now. He's at Reds. Hopefully he can open the spaces, so hopefully Jerry can join us while he's between sets today. But I do have the Twitter X spaces open. So for those of you who are joining there, we would love to hear your comments on the upcoming game against Texas that is happening in just now less than 2 hours, Josh. Hard to believe we're already here, but I'm starting to get fired up, man. All day I was just kind of, perusing the other regional tournament games. We'll talk about those scores in a little bit, but now I'm starting to get the butterflies. Now I'm excited. How about you?
Well, the great thing about postseason baseball is it's a new season. Feels good. Feels like, we have a it feels like we have a chance to win again. I'm laughing at Joel. that's great. I wanted to say what do we set the over under on? Does Jerry miss leg day or not? We'll set it on. Tell you what, we'll do a yes or no poll question. Let's see if we can get let's do a poll
question.
Definitely
does Jerry, does
Jerry do leg day?
Oh,
but
Jerry,
yeah, no, it's always fun. It's been a long week because we're looking forward to Friday and get the boys back on the diamond and a chance to compete in the postseason. It's always fun. And Texas, it's Texas. No matter who you are, no matter what sport you play, it's still the Longhorns of UT Austin. So that's exciting in and of itself. I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. We're going to get into a few stats here and there a little bit later in the stream. In a lot of ways, you can throw the stats out because as we've seen year after year when we've competed in postseason play, again, it's a brand new ball game. You start fresh. So I'm excited, Nick. I'm ready to go.
Absolutely. And look, I was going to open the show with Augie Garrido sound bites, but there was nothing family friendly. So couldn't do it. So we're not going to go the Audi route, but we are definitely going to talk some Texas baseball. As I said, we take a look around the country, see what's happening out there in other regionals. But first, we'll take a quick time out. Thank our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll get into it.
Hey, everybody. Thanks again for joining Raging Review for another weekly episode. We'd just like to encourage you to patronize our great sponsors like Dr. Brett Venable and Recovery Cairo Med. Have you been in a car accident or hurt yourself lifting on the job? Are you having neck pain or back pain, but really don't want to deal with a long, drawn-out process? Then call the chiropractor Raging Cajun athletes use for their neck and back pain, Dr. Brett Venable. The bottom line is, you just need to feel better. You need to get better quickly. That's where Dr. Brett Venable comes in to make all the difference. Dr. Venable and his integrated team of rehab, chiropractic, and medical doctors have 3 locations in Acadiana to serve you: Opelousas, New Iberia, and of course, main office in Lafayette. Dr. Brett Venable is one of very few chiropractors recognized by the state of Louisiana as a chiropractic specialist. He is also the only chiropractor in the Cajuns Healthcare Alliance and the only chiropractor on the board at Tulane School of Professional Advancement. Before you start to stress about the process, remember, this is exactly why you pay for car insurance. These situations are exactly why you carry workman's comp. There's no need for a court date. Your first call should be to Dr. Brett Venable and his great team at Recovery Cairo Med. No hassle, no waiting, and quick relief. Come and find out what our Raging Cajun athletes and over 10,000 Acadiana residents already know. For more information, call the Lafayette office at 337-988-2188 or visit recoverychiromed.com. recoverychiromed.com. We'd like to thank Dr. Brett Venable for being an RCAF member and the exclusive chiropractic sponsor of the Raging Review podcast. Also, a huge thank you to Absolutely Embroidery and More. We know how much Cajun Nation loves their gear. At Raging Review, we get our gear from Miss Phyllis Thibodeau and the team at Absolutely Embroidery and More. Absolutely has a massive inventory of Raging Cajun apparel to choose from. If you can't find something you like, Absolutely can make something you'll like right there in the shop. And if your creation proves to be a popular item with customers, Absolutely will give you a little incentive for helping out with the cause. Bring in your vermilion and white shirts, hats, shorts, socks, dresses, jackets, sweaters, or whatever garment you need to represent the Cajuns. Absolutely also offers customized embroidery services to promote your business on hats, polos, uniforms, etc. Absolutely rounds out the collection with an assortment of exciting accessories for the Lady Cajuns in your life. Earrings, headbands, bracelets, clutches, and bags are just a few options to complete her spicy look. Pass by 3010 Collie Saloon Roan in Lafayette and see the wonderful ladies at Absolutely Embroidery and More today. They'll treat you to quality Cajun clothing, complimentary gourmet cookies, and a friendly conversation. And if you're an out-of-town Raging Cajun, visit them on the web at absolutelyembroideryandmore.com or visit their social channels on Instagram or Facebook. There, you'll find pictures of what the ladies are putting on the shelves in real time. Once again, folks, please support local businesses and please support businesses that support the Raging Cajuns and especially the Raging Review podcast.
And thanks once again to our fantastic sponsors, Josh. Before we get into the scores around the country, just want to point out Jerry's leg day is indeed on Tuesday. So for all of you wondering, Jerry is today is not leg day for him. But let me refresh these scores, see what we got going on out there. As we expected, Texas A&M dominating Grambling 8-0. Look, again, Texas A&M has really good pitching. They've got solid hitters. It could probably be 18-0 right now, but it is 8-0 in the top of the eighth. Georgia and Army, a surprising score right now. They're tied at 7 in the bottom of the eighth inning. James Madison from the Sun Belt is up on South Carolina 7-5 in the top of the seventh. So congratulations to the Dukes. Hopefully they can pull it out. Other interesting scores, Nichols and UC Irvine. I think somebody just mentioned Nichols is up on UC Irvine 1-0 with runners on second and third. Thank you, Andrew Menard, for pointing that out. So another Louisiana team doing well so far this regional. LSU getting the win over Wofford 4-3. Wofford led that game for most of the game. And Josh, you said it earlier today, and I agree with you. They're a scrappy team. Wofford is they're no joke. I wouldn't want to face them in a regional.
I think they were one arm short of winning that game. You know, TSAB is loaded, man. They have, I don't know, 6-7 quality hitters that can put the ball out of the ballpark at any moment. I think at one point Wofford gave up 3 consecutive solo home runs, not in a row, not back to back to back, but I think 3 of TSAB's hits in a row were solo home runs. And Milam, the freshman guy, freshman All-American, second baseman, I believe, he walked it off and he had 2 home runs today. Wofford battled. They were gritty. And I know we use those terms way too much and they're overplayed, but they went out there and manufactured runs. They did hit up. They popped one. I think it was in the 7th to answer the solo job by Milam to go up 3-1. I think it was in the 7th, but good game, really good college baseball game. And as much as I hate to say it, you got to give credit to TSAB. Jump, their starting pitcher, went out and just had an absolute, he had a game. I mean, he put some pressure early on in the second inning, I think is when they got their runs. Wofford went out, put pressure on the Tigers, and he kept them in the game. Gavin Guidry, and then, they brought in Herring, the All-American, to shut the door on Wofford, and it's a good ball game. That's what you're going to get in postseason play. Doesn't matter if your name is LSU or if your name is UConn. A 4 seed, the Huskies, who just beat Duke, who I think is maybe a top 5 team in the country. So that's why this time of year is just so fun. You never know who you're going to get. You never know who's going to step up in a big moment. And, you know, shout out to Wofford. They didn't pull it out, but that was a hell of a college baseball game.
Look, that is what TSAD does. I mean, they did it against us. Was it Bryn Conrad in 2015 where we go into the super at TSAB? We go down like 3-2 in the top of the ninth. Bryn hits a solo home run. We're 3-3. We're feeling good about ourselves, saying let's go into extras. And then they hit a solo home run to win the game. I mean, that's what they do in these situations. So I don't know. They must have sold their soul to the Shaws back in the day to get all this winning in tournament time, but they always seem to find a way to pull it out. Another conference team today playing. That is a final. Coastal Carolina absolutely dominating Vanderbilt 13-3. They scored five early, and then they scored five like in the eighth. So the game was never in question. They absolutely dominated an SEC team. So when you hear, the SEC is just so tough and you couldn't play there, I think Coastal Carolina proved that point not quite correct. What do you think?
I'm thrilled that our league is showing out today. And look, our friends over there to the east in Mississippi got their ass kicked pretty good today, and that's unfortunate. But when we had Indiana in the Carbot Classic a couple of years ago, you could see some glimmers. I thought Indiana was on the come. They definitely had the offense to be able to compete at a high level. They put some pitching together this year. I thought that when they started the season, they looked like they were going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Big Ten. It didn't work out that way, but I think that Indiana still, they're probably the second best team in that regional. I maintain, and I know that USM had a great second half. I still maintain that USM does, they're not all that great. I mean, on paper, you know, I know the names, but when they came to the Teague, I will reiterate what I said then, I wasn't all that impressed with them. They are top heavy in the lineup. They still don't hit the ball enough for me. It's not long enough. Their lineup's not long enough. And they have about three pitchers that can do anything. And today, Oldman, he got exposed a little bit. So I think Georgia Southern really got to him in the tournament. Maybe he's tired. You know, that's this time of year, you can never underestimate how much work you've put into this point. I think Oldham's gone like 75 plus innings. I mean, that's a lot for a guy that's a JUCO transfer, that you're not used to throwing that many innings, stress innings. You know, there's a difference between going out and throwing a, you know, 10, 11 pitch inning when there's nothing going on. But when you got to throw high stress pitches in consecutive weekends, that starts to catch up to pitchers. So you never know. I thought USM was thin in the bullpen. I thought they were thin in that starting front line. Today, you could see where their issues lied. And like I said, I think Indiana can hit the baseball with the best of them.
No, I agree with you. And that final score was 10-4. Again, Indiana was in control for most of the game, so that one wasn't really close. As you mentioned earlier.
And look, to circle back to your Coastal comment. Look, Coastal Carolina is one of the best teams that's been in the game out of control in the country under Gilly. They have been for a long time. I don't think that they have the pitching to get through a regional, but I do think if they're in front and they're able to be that front-running team, they can win that regional. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm sorry, who's hosting the regional?
Clemson.
Clemson. Jesus, my bad. I'm not saying that Clemson is not a very good host team, and they've had a great season. But I still think that if you let Coastal jump on top of you early, they can run you out of your own ballpark because they have enough offense. They look healthy for the first time in a while. They had a brutal second half, but like anybody said, or like we said earlier, anybody can get hot at this time of the season. They're going to play for Coach Gilmore. They know what it's like to be successful in the postseason. They've built a program off of it. Do not be surprised if you see Coastal Carolina playing for a championship come Sunday or Monday.
I agree. I mean, they won a freaking College World Series in 16, so it's not been that long since that program's had success in Omaha. So I agree with you. If Clemson advances to face Coastal, I like Coastal's chances. Now, after that, as you said, their pitching gets a little iffy, so tomorrow's game is going to be absolutely imperative for them to win. Virginia, the number 12 seed in the country, beats Pennsylvania 4-2. That was a little closer than I may have expected. A shocker out of Greenville, East Carolina falls to Evansville 4-1. So that's we were talking about a wow factor. That's definitely a wow factor today. Kentucky edges Western Michigan 10-8, and then Florida State takes care of Stetson 7-2. It looks like Nichols is still They actually closed out the top of the first, so they are up on UC Irvine 1-0, and then Florida is up on Nebraska in the bottom of the fourth, 3-1. So anything outside of the obvious. I mean, we looked at the UConn score, definitely an upset in Greenville with East Carolina. Kentucky kind of just edging out Western Michigan. What kind of stands out to you so far in scores from around the regionals and across the country?
Well, first of all, that Kentucky game was 8-0 after a couple of innings.
Right.
So shout out to Western Michigan, who fought back all the way and almost pulled off a miracle. ECU, let's talk about ECU for a second. I'm thrilled anytime a smaller school gets to host a regional. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for ECU's program. But, I mean, let's be honest, they did not end the season well. And it wasn't like they just kind of hit the skids. I mean, they fell off a cliff. They got swept at Tulane. They went 0-2 in the conference tournament. They look bad. They almost played themselves out of a host site, which they were firmly in the driver's seat for all season long. But, you know, they've got some issues. They've got some issues. If they're not hitting the ball, they can't win. Their pitching staff is kind of bend but don't break, you know, to use a football term. ECU has problems. And credit to Evansville. They played some incredible defense in that game. They made just enough plays offensively to win. And the jungle is one hell of a ballpark to win it. I mean, that is a hostile environment. So shout out to Evansville. I mean, they went out there and earned that W. As far as the other games that you mentioned, I mean, they kind of speak for themselves. I still think UConn beating Duke is the story of the day so far. And Coastal beating Vandy the way they did also is quite a statement. But I still think that Duke losing the way that they did, 4-1, that's one hell of an offensive program to score one against that team. You know, UConn's a solid ball club. No shot at UConn, but to hold Duke to one run in 9 innings, you've accomplished something.
No, I agree. And look, I don't think the day of upsets is over. I mean, you've got Arizona, the number 13 seed, facing Grand Canyon. That is not a cakewalk by any means.
Grand Canyon. You hear it here first. Grand Canyon's the number. They are the best 4 seed in the country. They can easily be a 3 seed. They didn't win their conference tournament, so they got there was a stolen bid there, and they got picked up as an at-large. But GCU as a conference champion probably is a 3 seed. They're the best 4 seed in the country as far as I'm concerned. And I love the Tucson Regional, by the way. Lots of storylines there.
And that is ripe for an upset. Also, Oregon State against Tulane. I know Tulane is not, you know, the Tulane of old, but they still pose a threat to Oregon State as a number 15 seed. Not quite
scorching
ready
hot.
To pull. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to pull the upset button or push the upset button there quite yet, but I think there is a chance for Tulane to pull that upset 100%. UC Santa Barbara against Fresno State. UC Santa Barbara is the number 14 seed. I think that is also potentially ripe for an upset. I know Fresno State 33-27 on the year, but I still think they have a solid ball club from what I've seen this season.
Agree. And look, there's a reason why Cajun fans and everybody in our regional need to be paying attention to that, because we're paired with that regional. So if some way we get through the regional as Cajun fans, UC Santa Barbara, whoever wins that regional, things come into play there. I mean, there's an outside chance that there could be a super in Lafayette, Louisiana. So pay attention to that Santa Barbara regional. That's important to everybody that will be playing this weekend.
Totally agree. And the only other game that I see as a game, now I'll have my eye on a bunch of games today, but I think one of them that I'm going to keep an eye on during our game is Alabama and UCF. That's interesting. I want to see what that's going to be like, because I don't know that that's – I think that's a good matchup of two teams that have similar talent. So I'm interested to see how that goes. The others, I just think there are going to be no surprises. I mean, Tennessee takes on Northern Kentucky, Clemson and High Point. Obviously, it's baseball, so we can't look at baseball through a football lens, right? You can't assume that big name Power Five schools will always take the win, but I just don't think the matchups outside of those are going to be great. So those are some of the things going on in college baseball. Before we go today, we'll update some of those scores. Just again, a reminder, we have our Twitter space open. So if you are maybe if you're pre-gaming before our game starts out in a College Station, you can chime in and let us know what the atmosphere is out there. I know full well that the Water Hose Boys, or should I say the Cajun Burners, I don't know why I said Water Hose Boys, but the Cajun Burners are definitely out there having a good time already. We saw some of their pregame festivities, and that left field line where there was, it's not left field line, it's actually in left field behind the wall, is where you bring your own beer. Are you kidding me?
Where Will Veillon, he'll hit the 450-foot home run to that area. That's where they are for everybody that's seen that video. But yes, yeah, special shout out to the Burners. If they want to jump in the space, we'll give them as much time as they want because we get an eyewitness account with boots on the ground.
I agree. I think Will Veillon got drunk enough last night to ask who were better looking players, hockey, baseball, football, and basketball. And so, I can imagine if he was that lubricated last night, it's going to be a fun day for him if he attends the regional.
He asked that on Twitter?
Yes. You have to go check it out. It was kind of bizarre. I'm like, how much has this guy had to drink? Some of the Burners were even like, WTF, mate.
So. What's funny about that is that that's kind of a common thing. You know, it's competition between athletes at different programs. I mean, those kind of questions get asked. It's just dudes being dudes at the end of the day is what it is.
It's dudes being dudes, and I'll leave it at that. Josh, Jerry and I had a chance to go through some of the statistics, and my screen share is not working. So if you have those stats up, you remember that screenshot that you had provided us? If you could throw that up on the screen or maybe, I don't know, can you screen share from your end?
I will try. Yeah, I will expose myself as having some boomer qualities.
What was the site that you quoted on there? Because if you tell me that, I can throw it up.
College Baseball Nation, hat tip to them. Every year he puts together these different graphics that, you know, kind of give you a better idea of head-to-head matchup and where your team versus the team you're playing, where you rank nationally and things like that. And I like to use those kinds of graphics because it just gives you a different illustration of, you know, what you're looking at when you're going into these regionals. I found the graphic, so let's see. I'll try to pull it up.
Yeah, I'm able to. I can do it, actually. I've got it up now, so I'll go ahead and share my screen since I'm driving. But I'll throw that back up there. Look, we went through the stats. We kind of gave a high-level overview of our thoughts as far as how the statistics, you know, from team to team look and where we match up in certain areas. Obviously, against A&M, their strikeouts, when they're hitting, they strike out a lot. But they're not bad at really anything else. And the glaring stat against, for me, against Texas today is that we walk 144 batters a game. We have walked this season 144 batters. They've walked 113, but our patience at the plate has not been there this season. So while you think that might be an advantage that they walk a lot of batters just like we do, we don't have the patience. So I guess, Josh, what I'm asking is just talk to me a little bit about going into the Texas game today. You see the discrepancy in some of these statistics, but that aside, what are you looking for out of the Cajuns, and what do you expect out of the matchup with Texas today? I know they're going with, and his name is escaping me, as the starting pitcher. I wanted to say Oldham, but I know that's not his name.
Max Grubbs is who you're thinking
Grubbs,
of.
Grubbs. And Grubbs is – look, Grubbs and Brian Benton touched on it. Grubbs can throw – I mean, he can actually dominate a lineup, but the problem is he'll dominate – every other batter in a lineup. He'll walk a guy, he'll hit a batter, and then he'll get three straight strikeouts. So when you're looking at a guy like that, again, when you don't have patience at the plate, you almost want to take that walk out because it figures we're going to go down 0-2 anyway. So I guess talk about the matchup, our hitters against their pitching, and then what you expect against with our pitching against their hitting today. What do you kind of look for out of this first game in the regional?
Well, I'll talk about him and who he is, and then I'll talk about how he matches up against our offense, and then we'll get into who he's been this year. First of all, he's a sophomore. He was on the team in 2023. We did not see him in the Miami Regional. So we have really no frame of reference outside of film and scouting and all that stuff. But, you know, he's going to get into the mid-90s with his fastball, and he's a sinker-slider type of guy. He will throw the ball outside of the strike zone, and he will rely on swing and miss. However, that might sound like, oh, well, we have some opportunity there to be patient and take some bases and you know, make him throw pitches. Here's the thing. We're not a very patient offense. You mentioned the amount of times that we've walked offensively. It's 268th in the nation. So that shows you that we already know we're an aggressive offense, but when you see it on paper, you know, it gives you pause. And he's a guy that doesn't throw a whole lot of pitches. For example, his high this year is against UCF, a team you mentioned early, earlier, he went 5 2/3 and threw 105 pitches. Now, that sounds like a lot. He gave up 7 hits and an earned run in that game. So even though UCF was able to kind of grind him down and get him into a high pitch count, he still really didn't give up much. He struck out 5 nights. You know, I mean, this is the kind of guy he is. He can make mistakes because he is so talented, and then he can come back and get you because his stuff is elite. So we have to be, number one, very, very selective at what we swing at. Number two, patient. Number three, we have to understand that he's going to punch us out a little bit. And I know that there's kind of a narrative on the internet about how he's a pitch-to-contact guy. He's really not a pitch-to-contact guy. He's trying to get you to be a bad ball swinger. He wants you to swing at balls outside the strike zone. If you pound that into the ground, well, okay, great. That's a great result for him. But he's not going to get the ball in the air a lot. He's relying on his stuff to keep you banging the ball into the dirt. So that's a little bit about what his makeup of a pitcher is. He can hit mid to high 90s with the fastball, but the sinker slider stuff, I think his slider is at 90, and his sinker is around 88, 90. So he's going to sit in the higher end of you know, the MPHs, all right? That's just what we're looking at. Unfortunately, we haven't done well against that type of a pitcher. I'm not saying that we can't manufacture runs, but what I am saying is that we're going to have to get back to manufacturing runs. We're going to have to be that offense that we've relied on in the past, in the postseason especially. We can't go out there and try to swing for the fences and try to, you know, this is not a game to get your slug up. This is a game where we need base runners. We need to put constant pressure on him. We need to show him that we're going to be, there's going to be traffic on the base paths in every inning. We can't go have, you know, 5 6 pitch innings. That is not a winning recipe against a guy like this. We need to get his pitch count up early, and we need to try to get him out of the game because he is a bad matchup in my view. So that's just what he's done. A few things that he's done this season, right? Texas State is a common opponent. We know a little bit about them. They're a conference mate. He didn't get out of the second inning against Texas State. Now, it was early. It was the Houston Classic. He went 1 2/3. He only gave up a hit and a run, unearned, by the way, but he threw 33 pitches in an inning and 2/3. So Texas State kind of got to him. It's hard to tell early in the season because you're still trying to find out who these pitchers are. So that's really the only common opponent that we had. There was another in Houston, I've been holding that sneeze in. The only other common opponent was Houston, and you'll find this interesting, Nick. In a loss, he went 5 innings, gave up 6 hits, 5 earned runs. He walked a guy, only 3 strikeouts. He gave up 2 home runs to Houston, and he had a wild pitch and 2 hit batsmen, threw 84 pitches. Now, we know that Houston has a pretty potent offense. They're not a tournament team, but we know they can score runs. Ultimately, their issues were on the mound, you know. So we also, the Cajuns, were also able to score runs on Houston, but we saw what they had to offer offensively. That's the kind of that relentless approach where you're being selective, but you're still getting results on pitches that you need to hit. When he makes a mistake, you got to make him pay. You can't be fouling off. When you're in a hitter's count and he's giving you something to hit, there can be no foul offs. You have to make him pay. Go with the pitch. Hit it to the opposite side of the field if you have to. This is the kind of approach we have to have today. Unfortunately, we haven't had those type of games lately. And like I said at the beginning of the show, you can hit the reset button offensively. You can go into a game and say, hey, we trust our scouting report. We trust our older guys to not be scared of the moment. And we have a lot of those guys on this team. You have to understand the moment. This is not a time to go try to hit balls in the gap. Go with the pitch. Do what the pitcher gives you. Take what he gives you. And let's try to make him pay on the back end when we get in the bullpen. So anyway, he didn't fare well against Houston in that span from April 6th to April 26th, right? 20 days, 4 losses. He gave up an average of 4.5 runs earned. He threw a lot of pitches in those outings, 84, 98, 85, and 90. So it's not like he was getting in and out. 5, 6, and 5, and 6 innings pitched in those games. So they rode him half the game. He started those games. You know, this is not come in long relief. They relied on him to go out and get him off to a good start, and he couldn't do it. So he is gettable. He is susceptible to an offense that puts pressure on the pitcher. Now, he's kind of gotten it together later in the season. Kansas, UCF, and Oklahoma State, all 3 wins. 90 pitches, 105 pitches, and 65 pitches. So long outings. six innings, 5.2 and 4.2 innings. The Kansas game was right before the tournament in which Texas won the game. I made that comment. One earned run, and four earned runs against Oklahoma State. So even Oklahoma State, a potent offense like that, four runs, Oklahoma State would say that's not really a great outing for their offense. Max Grubbs is going to go out, and he can be dominant, but we have to force him to make mistakes. And when he does, you've got to take advantage. He's not going to give you anything.
So kind of on the opposite side of that, we're starting Carson Fluno. I know that Texas has a bunch of lefties in their lineup. I believe they have a bunch of lefties in their lineup. I thought we'd be coming out with Chase Morgan tonight. One, does that tell you that we're still not sure if Herman's even going to pitch this weekend? I've not heard anything, but I would have expected we started Simo today. Are you hearing anything on that, or was that your expectation we go with Fluno today?
I'm hearing that Herman is not 100%. Now that's just hearsay. Don't take that to the bank. That's hearsay. But I think it's more than physical, if that makes any sense. So that's concerning. However, Fluno has been really good lately. And you got to think, maybe the reason why we've done this platoon pitching, aside from the fact that Herman's been going through something or, you know, whatever it is, mental, physical, whatever. Aside from that, Fluno has been getting results. He's been dealing when he's been in the game and had some opportunities. Also, think about this. We ran Nezu out there last year, very similar style, very similar fastballs, similar, you know, the things they want to do to get you out, they're very similar pitchers. And he was very effective against the Texas Longhorns offense. And I thought that offense was better than the one they have this year. So it doesn't really surprise me that Fluno's the guy. Also, Fluno is your eldest pitcher. Fluno's been in this situation before. I think that they want the calmness of a Fluno to get things started. And also it kind of gives you the opportunity to kind of reverse pitch. So if I have Simo going against a Texas A&M, you know, that's really where I want to be. Check out his whip. He's the guy that I want on the mound if I'm going against the best team in the regional. And at the end of the day, Nick, you pitch to win the regional. You don't pitch to win on Friday. One thing I do love about Deggs is it feels like he's kind of shifted his opinion on that. Early on, it felt like he wanted to win that first game just to be able to say, hey, look, we got it in. We got in the winner's bracket, and that's where we need to be, whatever. This feels more like maybe Gunner's in his ear saying, hey, the way we're going to get out of this regional with a victory, a regional trophy, is to pitch our best guy in the best game. I see both sides of the coin on that, but I want to win the regional. And in order to win the regional, I think you need Simo against an A&M.
And that's what I was going to say. I don't have any problem with it. I think I was just a little taken aback because I thought we would see Simo against a heavy left-handed lineup. But, you know, you look at Texas's stats hitting-wise this season, and they're kind of similar to us. I mean, they strike out a whole lot, even more than we do. 510 strikeouts in the season. That's 58th out of 64 in the tournament. So you have opportunities there to you know, if Fluno goes out and in the first three innings gives up six runs, then I think we're in trouble. But I think if Fluno goes out there, gets a few strikeouts, is settled down, you know, things happen in the first in that environment. But if he gives up a couple of runs, settles down and pitches like we know Carson can pitch, I think we'll be in good shape because Texas will give you the opportunity. They're aggressive at the plate as well. Again, we have got, you know, in these tournament situations, and we say it all season, you know, you can't make mistakes. You can't give runs to the other team. You can't take runs off the board. This is a microcosm of everything you say through the whole season, because it's true. You give opportunities to a team like Texas and they'll capitalize on it, just like we will capitalize on mistakes that Texas makes. So it's almost a case of like, who's going to blink first? Who's going to make the first mistake? Who's going to throw the silly wild pitch to advance a runner? Who's going to make a base running mistake? That's kind of what I'm feeling, because I feel like these teams are actually, I know, again, you look at stats and they're favored one way or another, but you feel like going into this game, these teams are very evenly matched with some of the same issues that we've seen for both of them this season. So I think you're looking for who blinks first in this game today. And I think as long as Carson goes, well, one, as long as we're patient or more patient at the plate, and two, as long as Carson goes out there and doesn't panic and have a bad, you know, three innings, then I think we'll be in good shape. But if we start the silly stuff that we see pop up a couple of times every, I'd say every 2 weeks, it's going to be a long, long weekend for us. And we definitely have to get off on a good foot against Texas. I don't know. Is that how you're seeing it? I don't see any real advantage for either team this game.
Very much so. I would say that the teams actually do mirror each other in several scenarios. But here's the thing. And look, I think that the Sun Belt Conference plays serious baseball, and I like our league at the top. And I'll also say that the Big 12 is down, mostly down, after about the fifth place team than we've seen in the past. But I think that Texas played better competition week in and week out, and I would say that they're a little more battle tested down the stretch. So I would say that there's a difference there. But outside of that, if on paper, very similar teams. I like us better infield defense. I think our infield is more solid defensively than they are. I like their outfield better than ours as it stands right now. I think they have a bit of an advantage there. I really like Torres behind the plate defensively. I think he's as rock solid as it gets. And that's including Texas's catcher. I mean, I've been watching some good catchers in this tournament so far, and I think Torres is right up there defensively and managing a pitching staff, as far as I'm concerned. That's what I'm talking about. But end of the day, Nick, you got to play your best baseball this time of year. All that other stuff goes out the window. I don't want to hear about injuries. I don't want to hear about – and Deggs would say the same thing. If you want to be successful in the postseason, you've got to learn to play your best baseball when it matters. And the good thing for us is that when we play Raging Cajun baseball, our ceiling is extremely high. And I would probably Texas would say the same thing. When they play up to their talent level, they have a very high ceiling. But, I mean, based on what we're watching and the trends, I would say that the Cajuns are due to come out of this little offensive kind of funk that they've been in, and that includes the tournament. Look, I know we had a 7-run inning against JMU. I would say that a lot of that was because we were able to put pressure on a guy that is kind of gassed, and we had him beat, and the bullpen let it go. And that's disappointing, but offensively, I felt like we started to kind of get our groove back, but we have this weird thing where we just regress. We score 6 or 7 runs in an inning, and we take the rest of the game off. That has got to be out of our repertoire at this point. We have to know it is imperative to put pressure on a pitcher in every inning. These 5 or 6 pitch innings have got to go by the wayside. That cannot happen in this tournament. Whether it be Texas or Texas A&M, can't happen against Grambling. You mentioned Grambling and how they played A&M. One thing that happened with A&M was that Grambling was able to get into their bullpen a little bit earlier. And I know 8-0 seems like a dominating game, but you would think that A&M could have beaten them by double that. So I think that there's some good things happening behind us or in front of us. The Cajuns play good baseball at night in College Station since 2022. That's all. We were at the game against TCU. They were not scared of the environment. A&M's not playing. A&M hates Texas. Maybe we'll have a little bit of a crowd advantage tonight. Look, I think that there are some things that you can look at and say the Cajuns have a couple of advantages in this game. I know it's Texas, but like you mentioned, they're very similar in a lot of ways. Who's going to play their best baseball at this time of the season? That's really the question. That's really the question, because the ceilings are high for both teams. Some of their best players are not playing their best baseball right now. I just love the fact that you get to reset right here. And as we've seen in the games already, you have no idea what's waiting for us at 5:00.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I think the biggest stat that jumps out at me is they hit 109 home runs this season. And we keep saying it. They're a power hitting ball club. And so they've not really had to manufacture runs on the base paths. They're only 41 of 52 in stolen bases. On the flip side, the Cajuns are 66 of 93, not where we were a year ago, not even close. I think half of where we were a year ago. But I think, again, like you said, to win a game like this, even though Texas is not the Texas of old, I think you've got to respect the program. You've got to it's like TSAP. They always find a way to make the game not only competitive, but pull it out at the end. So I think you've got to do the small things, including manufacturing runs. And we can't, I'm going to say it again, especially in this game, you can't run yourself out of an inning We can't have any of those silly base running mistakes. Deggs can't send a guy from third when he's, you know, out by 40 feet at the plate. It's got to be tight all around. But look, the game is there. I mean, we're ranked second in the regional. They're ranked third for a reason. The game is there for your taking. I just think the Cajuns need to show up and play their game. And Fluno cannot give up the long ball today. Now, a solo home run here or there, I'm good with it, right? But you can't give up two, three, four grannies, obviously, but you can't give two or three run homers or a four run inning. I mean, that's just going to kill you in the end, because then what do we do after that? We press, and then we start swinging at bad pitches, and then it's downhill from there. So
the key to that is keeping guys off the base paths when they don't earn it.
Agreed.
And we talked about freebies, and Deggs has brought it up. Nick, it just is. And you know, when Fluno is good, he's scattering 7-8 hits and giving up a run or two. That is his A game. When he's not good, is he's pitching out of the stretch, and he's pitching in a full of stress inning, and he's constantly having to get himself out of jams. Now, he'll do that. You know, I mean, that's the truth. And kind of to illustrate that point, and look, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, all right? I've already said it's a fresh start type of situation, and I like all the intangibles with Fluno. But let me just give you some numbers that I kind of compiled that you and I have talked about the woes on the pitching staff since around the Coastal series. So I went and tried to dig deep and try to get, you know, past the regular stats. And these are not necessarily advanced metrics, but they are some things that kind of highlight those little nuanced situations, right? You know, the things that you kind of, they impress upon you that we're not getting the job done, but you can't put your finger on exactly why. Let me just tell you this. Our season average whip is 1.32. Pretty solid for a team. Team ERA is 4.32. Again, solid. Top 20 in the country. Base on ball per nine. So walks per nine inning, 4.38. Not great, but not awful. Not great, but not awful there. Ks per nine. Strikeouts per nine innings, 10.1. One of the best in the country, and has continued to be solid throughout. No matter if we're on the road, winning or losing, we have typically been able to strike hitters out. And then hit by pitch per nine is 1.5, which, I mean, that's about average. Since April 19th, okay, and that's the Coastal Series and beyond. So this includes the Coastal Series. Our whip as a team has gone up to 1.48. Team ERA has almost increased by two full runs at 6.28. Walks per nine has gone to 4.28, which is a little bit better than our season average. Ks per nine gone down to 8.5, so almost a strikeout and a half less than our season average. And then our hit batsman per nine is about the same. Here's where it really gets interesting, and this is really where you and I talked about the splits at home and away. So since April 19th, which is the Coastal Series and beyond, away from the Teague, so on the road, different team on the mound, our whip is 1.63. That is a huge difference than our season average at 1.32. Team ERA on the road since April 19th is 6.81. Walks per nine, 5.09. Five walks per nine is unacceptable. Ks per nine is at 8.7, and which I mentioned, that's been pretty stagnant. I mean, they've been able to strike guys out, and your hits per hit batsman per nine is still at 1.5. So whip, it might not sound 1.32 to 1.63. That is a gigantic step in the wrong direction. Hits, that are not familiar with whip, it's your hits plus walks per inning. And 1.32 is a pretty decent number. It's actually better than decent. It's top 20 in the country. 1.63 would put you somewhere around 120th in the country. ERA, team ERA at 6.81, you're in the 200 plus category. And then five walks an inning per nine, you're 250 plus. And that, again, that's Coastal and beyond, away from the Teague, which we're in College Station this weekend. Obviously, that's away from the Teague. You got to have that in the back of your mind. How are we going to pitch on the road? Are we going to be able to overcome the crowd? And again, that's why I like Fluno today. Get out there, get us off to a good start. Let guys breathe. Let them get comfortable in that environment. Again, Jerry mentioned a great point about Texas A&M going to be pulling for the Cajuns against the Longhorns. I mean, yeah, that actually might really move the game in the direction of the Cajuns. So it's not something you can overlook. It's a good point. But the pitching staff, and that's as a team. And look, I understand that Herman has had some issues I understand that we've been squeezed as a staff. All of that stuff gets wrapped up into it. The numbers don't lie. I mean, that's over since April 19th. You're talking about almost 2 months. Well, almost 7-8 weeks. That's who we've been lately. That has got to change. And again, that includes the Sun Belt Conference tournament. Those numbers have got to change today.
I agree with you on everything that you said. Let's say Foligno gets through. I don't know. I expect he's going to throw a lot of pitches. I mean, I honestly do. I think he's going to get through about the fourth, maybe the fifth.
If you give me five, I'll
be very happy.
If you said I can give me five innings with three runs given up, I'll take it right now as we sit, Nick.
And my question, by the way, is
if you can put somebody behind him like David Christie.
That was my question. Who do we follow him up with?
I like David Christie because he's going to throw the ball out of the zone. He has movement on everything, and Texas is an aggressive swinging ball club. I think that's the matchup personally. Now, if you feel like you have the game in hand and it's a close game and you want to bring in your big gun and LP and get that win, I personally like, I really like him after Herman because of Herman's style. If you can bring LP in after a lefty, Tom Glavine type pitcher in Semo, to me, that's deadly. And I would be saving him for A&M, but that's just me. That's the way I see it. That's a traditional approach, more of a robe approach, but it would be interesting. I think my preference would be to see David Christie, even though he's still coming from the right side. I don't know. I still think I would like Christie as the matchup.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to see LP against Texas because they are a power hitting team. And look, not to say A&M is not. I mean, hell, they hit 121 home runs this season.
Sure.
But I just feel like you have a deep, we got to start trusting some of the, well, it's not about trusting the guys. We have got to have some of those guys like a Martinez, like an Etheridge, like a Christie, that when they come in, they do their job, right? I'm not asking them for them to be spectacular. What I'm asking them not to do is walk and hit batters and throw wild pitches, which is what we have seen. I mean, JT or I forgot who came in during the tournament and in their appearance, they give up like two base on balls and a hit by pitch. Like you can't come in during a regional situation and do that. And there was nobody in the stadium. Now there are going to be some Texas fans there. I'm not saying they're A&M, but against in a regional situation where you already feel pressure and it's hot, it's going to be 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, sun's still out in College Station. Then you got these Texas fans there. They've got to show me something today, man. They really do. And I know I'm stating the obvious, but it's pregame. And you know, that's what we're here to do is we're here to be fans and pregame. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is if guys come out and do their job, and I'm talking hitting and pitching wise, if they come out and just do their job, nothing spectacular, this game is theirs for the taking. It's whether or not we stumble and then start doubting ourselves and go down that rabbit hole.
I think today is a day, you know, and we ask this question on the pod all the time. Who do you trust? I think today is the day that you ride with the guys that you trust. I trust Carson Fluno. I have, and I know he's had his ups and downs this year, but it feels like he's right at the right time. He looks good at the right time. And I have said it many times, I trust David Christie. Has he been spectacular every time he's taken the rubber? No. Is he a guy that I know can perform under pressure? Has he given me some clear evidence that he can do so? Yes, and I trust him today. Also, does he give me the opportunity to save guys for A&M that really help us achieve our ultimate goal in winning a regional? Absolutely. So today, and the reason why I say David Christie and Carson Fluno, those are the two guys that I trust. You know, they're in my top five of guys that I trust. And I bet if I had to ask, if we could sit down Degs right now and say, hey, man, gun to your head, who do you trust? I bet you those two names come up. So it's just a matter of, you know what you can do. We know what you can do. It's time to perform. And that's the bottom line. I can read all these stats until we're blue in the face. All this does is tell you a story of who you've been. Let's see who you're going to be. That's where we're at today.
Great way to put it, man. So Cajuns and Texas will start at 5 p.m., I believe, right? 5 p.m. on ESPN2.
As long as we're on track. I think they started at noon today, so I think we're good.
Yeah, and on ESPN+, I was kind of hoping that that game would go long today, which it did. But I was hoping for something crazy to come and like put them in some sort of 45-minute weather delay. I mean, I don't mind us playing at 8. That makes me no difference. But letting the other teams play a little bit longer would have been good. But I think they were pretty much on track today. Let me just take a look at the college baseball scores right now. Let's see. JMU is still, oh, wow. They're still on top of South Carolina, 7-5. They're going to the bottom of the ninth inning.
Fantastic. So,
three outs for James Madison, three outs away from winning their first game in that regional, which would be two SEC teams taken down by the Sun Belt. But it just means more. Arkansas and Southeast Missouri State tied at 8 in the top of the fifth. That is developing.
Look, don't sleep on the Hawks, man. SEMO is legit, have been for years.
SEMO has always been a solid team. Oregon is up on San Diego 3-1 in the middle of the seventh inning. Top of the eighth, West Virginia over Dallas Baptist 4-0, which I really thought Dallas Baptist would flip that score right there. Interesting.
I picked them to win the regional.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great regional.
That is a good regional. Florida up on Nebraska 3-2, bottom six. And then in the middle of the third, UC Irvine scored three. So they are up 3-1 over Nichols. Coming up
hey, at can five. We,
go ahead.
Can we spend some time on Florida?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I didn't get to join in on the last episode, which killed me because I had lots of thoughts on that. People upset about Florida being in the tournament. Folks, I understand they're 28 and 27. Go and look at their schedule. They have 15 better wins than we have. They have lost some games, but you know, somebody made a comment about they lost to UCF and they lost to Stetson, and there was a couple of other midweeks. UCF and Stetson are both tournament teams. There are others. And look, I know that their schedule is not sterling. I understand that. But look at they have a conference series win on the road against A&M. They beat Tennessee, Arkansas. They went to Arkansas and beat them in a series. Like, you can't keep a team like that out of the conference tournament. And I understand people say, well, it's mediocrity, 28 and 27. Look, I'm not going to argue with you that 28 and 27 looks the opposite of gaudy. But you have a player. They have the best college baseball player we've seen in a decade. I'm dead serious. Charlie Condon's a nice home run hitter, but he's not Jack Aglione. He doesn't pitch. This guy is a monster. He is not human. When you have a guy like that who's must-see TV, when you have the wins that they have, and that's what the committee, as fraudulent as this committee is, one thing that I think they get right regularly is how good is your good? And Florida's good is really, really good. You know, if you're going to keep Florida out, you would have had to keep LSU out too. Their strength of schedule was not even close. They were like 100 points behind where Florida was. Oh, and by the way, Florida went to LSU and beat them in a series. So if you're going to keep LSU out of the tournament, you got to keep Florida out. Florida absolutely deserves to be in this tournament. They'll probably win that regional. I mean, they probably will. So I understand that people say there's an SEC bias, and there totally is. If you want to be mad at anybody, I don't think TCU should have been left out. I don't think CFC, College of Charleston, should have been left out. They won their league, and they won like 41 games. Honestly, I don't think Coastal should have been in the game, in the tournament, and look what they just did today in their game. You know, it's the selection process is a dirty situation. I understand that. I know that people have a voice in the room probably have a leg up. I get that. Florida absolutely deserves to be in the field, in my view. They are very, very good when they're playing, when they're right. And I think they're going to win the regional.
I think, look, if you give a team like Coastal or Florida a chance, they're going to make noise.
Yes.
You know, I mean, TSAB did it when Maneri was retiring. They didn't deserve to be in that regional. Not at all. But they had a guy in the room that made the case, and they ended up in the regional, and they made noise that year. So
didn't they go to Omaha that year?
No, I think they were eliminated. They were eliminated by, wasn't it Southern Miss that year?
Was that the Southern Miss Super?
It might have been the Southern Miss year. Okay. I don't know. I just remember them playing and getting eliminated. They did not make it to Omaha this year. But it's, look, I'm not going to disagree with you. I know what initially I said, you're rewarding mediocrity, like you said. But, you know, having Brian on the last show would open my eyes into the fact that how these decisions are made. And it, look, as you said, there are definitely biases with those on the committee. End of story. So yes. A JMU got in because of a bias. A Coastal got in because of a bias. Both of those teams are probably going to be winners today and moving in because you gave them a chance. And I think that is also something that the committee looks at, is if you put a team like Coastal in, will they make noise? If you put a team like JMU in, are they going to be able to make some noise in that regional? If you put a Florida in, are they going to make noise in the regional? The answer to all three of those is yes. So I think they're looking for competitiveness as well there. But I don't know about you. When I'm looking at the decisions that these guys have to make in a room outside of the bias standpoint, I don't want any part of that. I mean, I think maybe next year we all get together and do a live show and we act like we're the committee and we pick people. Just to give an example of how difficult that is, because you're going to have a completely different outlook on what I think should be there than Jerry will. And then you get into infighting there. I don't want their job.
I agree. Let's do it. And let's not have their names on their resumes. Because agreed. To me, that's how it should be done. It should not matter. Geography should not matter. The names of the universities should not matter. It should be what have you put on paper throughout 56 games. To me, that's how it should be. And my last point about Florida, because I just, people that say that their RPI is 30 with 27 losses. Here's the reason why. Strength of schedule, number one in the country. They had a winning record against the number one record in the country. They went on the road to Miami, won the series. They went to Florida State and let's see, they split with Florida State two games. No, I'm sorry. They got beat by Florida State in two games. But they went on they hosted Texas A&M, won the series. They went to Baton Rouge, won the series. They went to Duty Noble and Mississippi State, won the series. Now they got swept at Missouri. That's where, you know, that's hard to swallow. You got swept, and then you lost two out of three in Gainesville against South Carolina, who was on a heater at the time. Then they lost two out of three against Vanderbilt in Nashville. Then they went to Arkansas, who was the number one team in the country at that moment, and they lost two out of three, but two of those games were one-run games. They beat Florida Atlantic in a midweek, and Florida Atlantic was on a tear at that time. They go to Knoxville, to the number one team in the country. All right? They lose two out of three there, but had two close games there. Kentucky, same situation, and then they go to Georgia in their last series of the season, to Georgia, and win the series. I mean, you can't keep them out. That's 15 wins better than our best win. You can't. That's just, it's impossible. So anyway, that's a long way to say, you know, they belong in. But I'm glad they're in. I'm glad that a Jack Caglione's in. I want to see the stars of the sport be on the national stage. That's what we watch for. Obviously, we want to see the Cajuns win. I mean, obviously, that's the number one priority. But you also want to be entertained. I love college baseball. It's as a whole, I think it's the best sport that we watch and follow. It's just fun across the board. It's just amateur enough to where there are mistakes and there's craziness, but it's they're so talented that it feels like pro ball. It's a perfect mix, and I just love this time of year. I think the regional system is the best post game in college sports.
At the end of the ninth inning, let's talk about what happened in the ninth inning for James Madison against South Carolina. If they go into the ninth up by 2-7-5. And South Carolina hits a two-run homer to tie it at 7. They are JMU and South Carolina now going into extras. Man, you know,
you got to put them to sleep when you get the chance. I mean, that's what you learn, you know. God, it sucks.
Yeah. So, well, that game going into extras, SEMO and Arkansas still tied at 8. None of the other scores have changed. That's tough, man. I was ready to come back and say, Josh, we got two Sun Belt wins today against SEC teams. That one's still out there. No doubt that JMU can still do it. I mean, their bats were hot, and they're continue to be hot. But damn, you felt
pretty good about JMU scoring runs, right? I mean, I did. Yeah. I felt like they'd be able to put up some runs. Were they going to be able to pitch? And they held up pretty well until when you're trying to knock out an SEC program, you got to put them to sleep when you have the chance, because the talent goes on for days. It doesn't matter who you're playing, whether it's Kentucky or you know, Auburn. they have talent up and down their roster, so you got to put them to sleep. But, you know, whatever. It's good. It's great theater, Nick. It's good for the game. Great for growing the game. Speaking of offense, before we get away from our game too much, and I know we'll, towards the end, we'll probably just talk about how we feel about going into the regional and all the tertiary stuff. Our offense has got to be better. And I know we've given pitching a hard time, but I do want to talk a little bit about the offense because you know what you're going to get from a Pastore, a Debo. JT is pretty solid. His on-base percentage has remained high. You know, LaFleur has been, for my money, he's had the best at-bats down the stretch, and I say, probably the last month. His approach at the plate is just unflappable. Outside of that, you know, who we can rely on Lee Amedee for a good part of the season. He's dried up. We're going to need Lee to find some fire. Higgs, you know, where are we going to meet him on his roller coaster of an experience? We really need him to be the Higgs of 2023 in this regional. And just to kind of illustrate the point about how you and I have been talking about how we struggle against Friday, Saturday pitching, you know, your front line ones and twos when we play quality clubs. So what I did was I went back into our schedule and I found all the tournament teams. And I looked at their ones and twos, their Friday, Saturday pitching. And that's their best bullpen guys and their best starters. So against tournament teams, now look, I'm going to highlight it this way. Our season average is 299. We hit 299 batting average as a club, good enough for 51st in the country. Our on-base percentage was 383, 152nd in the country. And our slug was 0.493, which is 61st in the country. You know, not great, not terrible. And that's good enough for an OPS, which if people who are not familiar with advanced analytics, that's on-base percentage plus slug. That's a 0.876 for the season. To give you some reference, Debo's OPS is 1.18 or 1.148. Higgs is 0.942. LaFleur was 1.104. That's to give you some context. So as a team, that gives you a little bit of an idea of where we are. Against tournament teams, ones and twos, you ready for this? We have a team batting average of 278, which would be in the lower third of the country if you ranked us nationally. Our on-base percentage was 0.323. That would be dead last in the country. Our slug, 0.365. Good enough for 278th in the country. Our OPS would be 0.688. Very bad. Very bad. I couldn't find rankings for OPS because they don't keep that as a team. But like average offensive clubs were in the 800s. Our walks per nine earned, 2.6. Three is the magic number. That's what Deg says. We're below three there. Our strikeouts per nine as a team, 9.1. Runners left on base was per nine innings was 6.8, so seven left on base. Not terrible. I think 5-6, you know, that 5-6 range is really where you want to be. So more than we want, but not awful. One thing we have been really good at is getting the runner in from third with less than two outs. Our percentage ended up being around 72%. Deggs' goal for us this season was 70%, so we hit it. So that's good. That's a good number. Anytime you accomplish a goal that you set before the season, you're happy about that. So we have been good at getting the runner in. So that's one thing we've vastly improved on from last year. But all that to say, we've earned runs per nine as an offense, 4.8. So sub five. Now, if you remember what I said about our ERA at a 6.81 since the Coastal Series, the offense hasn't produced enough to win games on a regular basis against good teams, tournament teams. And in May, we went 7-5 as a team. So that just gives you some numbers to kind of, you know, it helps you understand why we feel like we've been underperforming lately against better opponents, because the fact of the matter is the numbers prove that. Having said all that, tournament time, you throw all that out the window. It's just to kind of give us an idea of why we were where we were. And offensively, again, the ceiling is high. When Amedee's hitting the ball, when Higgs is hitting the ball, you know, you had guys step up. Like, Juha's went on a tear for a little while. I'd like to see his bat down at the bottom of that lineup. It seems like every time he gets slotted 6, 7, 8, he makes something happen. Against a team like Texas, who you feel like has their slugging percentage is pretty high as a team. I think it was in the 900s. And they hit 100 home runs. We have to have that pop that we feel like we can we can rely on to answer a home run from Texas or A&M. A&M is also a similar team. They're going to swing it. Who's going to step up? To me, the question mark is not at the top of the lineup, the 1 through 4s and maybe even 1 through 5. It's going to be 5 through 9. Who's going to come up in this situation? Hell, maybe it's a guy like Torres. You know, he has shown the clutch gene at moments in this season. I'd love to see him be clutch in the tournament scenario where you're down 7, 8, 9 in the order. You want to turn the lineup over a few times, get your big bats back up. Sometimes it's just a good at bat from a 9-hole hitter away from busting out a big inning. That really is sometimes all it is.
I agree. And I can't pull up on my screen because my screen's being stupid, but we do have a starting lineup for the game today. Batting first is Trey LaFleur. Second is Connor Higgs, which we talked about. Is Connor going to show up and be the Connor that hits the ball for power, or Connor going to be the strikeout king? We'll see. Kyle comes in. Debo comes in at in the 3 spot. JT batting cleanup today. Pastore is batting 5th. Liamade comes in batting 6th. Caleb Stelly is 7th. Jose is at 8th. Brian Broussard is in at right field batting 9th. Wow. And of course, Fluno getting the start. Your thoughts on the lineup today?
Well, my thoughts are that Brian Broussard is into having an athletic guy in the lineup to get on base and cause some chaos. That's you know, his speed is his number one tool. He also gives you a cannon in right field, so he's in for defensive purposes. I mean, he hadn't shown you much offensively all year. I still think that Juhas is a great tool in this situation, but I can't argue with the fact that Brian Broussard is not a better right fielder than Juhas. He certainly is. And honestly, we need to bolster the defense in the outfield. So I get that. I get that. I don't like Higgs in the 2-hole. I've been saying that all season long. There's absolutely no production. I mean, there just aren't. There just isn't, Nick. You know, he's just not. His approach is not patient. That is not the type of hitter he is. He's a fastball hunter, and that's what he's looking for. And as soon as you get him out over his skis, he is useless at the plate. That is not a 2-hole type hitter. It's a feast or famine.
Like, he's the epitome of what we've been doing that frustrates us.
And look, here's another thing. If you want to get advanced analytics, his best average is when we have runners in scoring position. He hits the best when we have traffic on the base paths. So, look, I know they want to get a left-handed bat up there at the top of the lineup. I totally understand it. I just disagree with it. Wholeheartedly have for a month. However, you know, we don't have a whole lot of options. We don't have a whole lot of options. I got to see something from Caleb Stelly. You know, I keep seeing that at bat that he had against Miami when we felt like the game was over and Miami was just stomping us, and Caleb Stelly comes out. He busts out the whooping stick. He gives you a flash of energy, and we made a little bit of a run there. I got to see postseason Caleb Stelly here. His defense has come a long way in center field, so I got to give him credit for that. But, man, you know, I just got to see something out of Caleb Stelly offensively. It's time, you know. He has been one of those everyday guys long enough to where we are justified in saying, got to get something out of Caleb Stelly. And not just a dinky little hit here. I need some good grinded out patient approach at bats from Caleb Stelly. And one thing about Caleb, he has great pitch selection. His plate discipline for me is one of the best on the team. Now, what he does with those pitches that he swings at, I think we can do better. But look, it's time. People, the lights are coming on tonight. It's time to play.
I am with you there. Josh, we're approaching 4:15. I know Jay and Bab are coming on the radio in 15 minutes, so I don't want to step on them, so we'll wrap it up. Before we go, wanted to ask you in layman's terms, look, well, first of all, let me ask you this. My opinion is we can't go when we're at the plate, we can't go 0-2 every at bat. That just puts you behind the 8-ball. It gives the pitcher momentum, and now you're you know, hitting from behind. We got to be patient at the plate. We said it over and over again. I think to me that is the key to today's game, because you know what? If Fluno doesn't have a day and our bullpen lets us down, we've got to have our bats to come and help us out. So I think that to me is the key to today's game. What is your key to beating Texas today?
2 keys. First of all, I think pitching has to win the game today. Pitching and defense has to win the game today. I don't think we have any business trying to get into a slugfest with Texas. That is not a winnable battle, in my opinion. I'm not saying there's some juggernaut offense, but I think that they have more top-end talent, and they can hit the ball all over the ballpark more than we can. The two keys that I think, if we can, number one, get Carson Fluno through the first inning, we can win. If we can't get him out of the first inning, we have absolutely no chance to win the game. We have to be very economical with our pitch count. We can't get the pitch count elevated and have to start going into the bullpen in the fourth inning. We can't do that. We got to get him through the first. That's the key, number one. Number two, our hitters have got to stay in hitter counts. Again, you mentioned it. 0-2. This 0-2 stuff where we swing at a bad pitch out of the zone and then we watch a ball down the middle. That can't happen today. This goes back to pitch selection. I understand that you're hunting fastballs, and I know that they usually throw them earlier in counts. I understand that. And Grubbs has very good stuff, so you're going to want to jump out on him early. And that's kind of Deggs' deal. Let's ambush him. You got to stay in hitters' counts. Stay in hitters' counts. Make him work. Make him understand that there are no easy outs with this offense. You may get us to ground to third, ground to first, you know, but you're going to throw me eight pitches first. That is a winning philosophy, a winning recipe. Going up there and taking three hacks and going sit back in the dugout, that's going to be a short afternoon, and it's not going to be happy on the other end. Stay in hitters' counts. Get Carson Fluno through the first inning. I think we can win the game.
I'm giving you $5,000. Not really, but pretend. Giving you $5,000 today to place a bet on the Caesars app, whatever, on who's going to win today. Who are you putting your money on?
Look, Nick, let's just be honest, dude, and I'm going to get punched for this, but look, it is what it is. We're Cajun fans. We watch with our emotions. I do my best to withdraw my emotions from what I'm seeing. Like, I try to do both. I try to get my emotion, you know, your emotional fix by being excited and upset. But I also try to watch the game and be analytical about it. The fact of the matter is that the Cajuns haven't shown anything in the last 4 or 5 weeks that make you feel like they can perform with some of these top, you know, say 50 teams in America. We just haven't showed that. It's not my opinion that we're not a good team. I'm saying, and as I've said for weeks, we're not playing good baseball right now. Do I think that we can hit the reset button and come out with our hair on fire? Absolutely. I totally believe that. But if you look at our last few years, we've been playing good baseball into the latter part of the season and into the tournament. We're not doing that this year. It's actually quite the opposite. So if I had to pick a team today based on how we're playing and based on how they're playing, I would say that I'd take Texas to win the game by a couple of runs. I mean, that's just the honest to God truth. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but look, I don't want to throw $5,000 away. If you're asking me to tell the honest to God truth, look, you know, you take your vermilion and white glasses off. Texas is just playing better baseball than we are right now. I'm not saying we can't win the game. I'm saying that if I had to make a pick, that would be the pick.
Understand completely. Don't disagree with you, but I'm going to pick the Cajuns because Deggs always finds a way during a regional tournament. Going back to Sam Houston, he always finds a way to win some games. Now, I'm not saying he's going to get into the Supers, which I think, look, talent-wise, we got the talent, dude. We've got the talent.
To your point about Sam Houston, the way he got to a Super with Sam Houston is he took Riley Cooper from the Cajuns and pitched him a bajillion innings, and he got him to a Super regional. That's how that happened.
But still, we always compete in regionals. We may go 1-2. We don't go 0-2. I just have a feeling, man. Look, we've, like you said, lately we have not looked sharp, but we have the ability to look good and be the water hose boys that we all expect. I think they're going to bring it today. I'm picking the Cajuns if I got that $5,000. And you know what? If I lose that $5,000, then I don't get my Tesla that I want to order. So that's how much I believe in them.
Allow me to say something positive so I don't get crucified too badly here. There are plenty of things that do fall the Cajuns' way. Ben Grubbs is still a young guy. Excuse me, not Ben Grubbs. Ben Grubbs is a tight end, used to play for the Patriots and the Saints. Max Grubbs, okay, he's still a young guy, all right? He has had his struggles this season, but he does have elite stuff. But he has had struggles. He is gettable. So that's one. Number two, JT, Kyle DeBarge, Trey LaFleur, Carson Fluno. I mean, I can go on and on and on. They have been in this exact situation at this exact field. They've played on Friday night against a really good team before. Just last year, they played against Texas, so they're familiar with the team. The name across the chest is not going to bother them one bit. Those experiences matter. You know, the reason why you do all that is to be battle-tested and weathered and be ready for this moment. So you have to look at that and say that is definitely that is something you feel good about as a Cajuns fan. You know, this is not new territory. This is something that, you know, in a lot of ways they can look back and say, we beat Texas last year. They just kind of got us, and since they got us on a couple of plays that we thought we made, and they made miracle plays. So maybe there's a revenge factor there. So that's something that you can lean on. Look, it's a natural surface. Texas plays on a natural surface at Dish Falk. This is a similar park to Dish Falk. It's bigger. You know, this is not a small park. It's similar to Teague, big. You know, that doesn't necessarily favor anybody. I mean, it may, if because Texas plays on a natural surface, you could say it favors Texas. But another thing a natural surface does is that when you're a bunting and chaos team, the ball does some weird stuff off a natural surface. With turf, you kind of know what it's going to do. I mean, it's very predictable. On natural surfaces, you can hit the lip of the grass and hit the sand and ball bounces. I mean, when you drop down a bunt, the ball might deaden rather than skip off on the turf. And you know, we do a lot of that stuff, or we have done in the past. We haven't done a lot lately, but all those things, those little things like that, the playing surface, stuff like that, that can favor a team that is looking to manufacture runs, not just hit the ball over the fence. So that's something that maybe is a positive for us. There are things that you can look at and say, hey, I feel good about it. But at the end of the day, it's everybody. Some of these guys will never play baseball ever again. And sometimes that does something to a player. We got a couple of those guys on our team. Debo's going to the majors after this. You know, Trey LaFleur's gone after this. Pastore's gone after this. You know, there's some of our most reliable players and bats. This is their last rodeo. And that'll bring out some dog in some guys. So there are things to lean on. There's a lot of things you can look at and say there's positive for the Cajuns.
Josh, it has been a pleasure. Before we go, any final thoughts for our game that's kicking off in just around 40 minutes?
I am excited as I can. It's still Texas. It's still a regional. It doesn't matter if we think we're going to lose by 10. It's fun to be a part of. It's fun to watch. It's something you look forward to all season long. I famously said, or infamously said, at the beginning of this season that the Cajuns would win a regional this year. So even though I picked Texas with the $5,000, I could be proven right at the end of this thing. So I'm rooting hard for the Cajuns.
You can't lose, man.
I know it's a win-win, right? But I'm rooting hard for the guys. I'll be watching. You know, I'll be ready. You know, I'll right in front of the TV, jumping around like I always am. So go Cajuns. Go get a victory. Bring it back home.
I'll be doing the same. It will look, as I said before, this will be fun. No matter what happens, we know this is going to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to this regional. And hey, guys, just got to go. Somebody's got to step up. At the end of the day, we need somebody, multiple somebodies, to step up to win not only this game, but compete in this regional. I think that's going to happen. I look forward to it. First pitch right after 5 p.m. Central. That about wraps it up, man. It's been a good time. I've really enjoyed my time, Josh. I know we had a lot to go through today. As the song says, I can't wait. I'm going to go pregame a little bit right now. I put a little bit of whiskey in here. That whiskey to Diet Coke ratio is going to increase.
We might want to start a GoFundMe for just in case the Raging Burners get put in jail. They might need a bond. So.
Oh, man. Good times. Well, that about does it for Raging Review today. Josh, if you're available, maybe after we come and do a post game, depending if we're both free and can speak at that point, we'll see.
Certainly a possibility.
All right. Like, subscribe, share. Tell your mama and them about us. For Josh, for Jerry, who's probably still working his back muscles, whatever he's doing today, I'm Nick. Thanks for tuning in to Raging Review once again. Bye, everybody.